Eoch tanuyap, kuige iwans kuyens na. Hi everybody, my name is kuige iwans. I'm a member of the Squamish Nation and the Yagalanis clan of the Haida Nation. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We live, work, play, and broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you if you're young at heart. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind if you're young at heart. You can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh when your dreams fall apart at the seams, and life gets more exciting with each passing day. And love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart? For as rich as you are, it's much better by far to be young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, look at all you'll derive out of being alive. And here is the best part, you have a head start if you are among the very young at heart.
Welcome to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection, your weekly look at the cooperative sector and social economy, proudly broadcasting on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman, along with Robin Puga, here in the studio to bring you tonight's show. According to the 2021 census, more and more Canadians are living longer, with the number of those age 100 and older increasing 16% from just 5 years ago. And the population 85 and older is one of the fastest growing age groups that's expected to triple over the next 25 years. With increasing age comes health challenges and activity limitations. Most seniors want to live at home with support, but sadly, many end up in long-term care, a system plagued by a whole host of problems exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. Frontline caregivers, the nurses, and personal support workers are mostly women and largely racialized, especially in urban areas. Their stories of being overworked, underpaid, and disempowered have caused many to leave their professions, resulting in even greater staffing shortages and a decline in the quality of care for seniors. Tonight, we meet Danielle Turpin, a personal support worker from Peterborough, Ontario, who left the long-term care system to start a worker co-op for PSWs. She begins our discussion by describing conditions for seniors and staff during the darkest days of the pandemic, and then shares what finally led her to walk away. Have a listen.
We were mums and aunts and daughters and sisters to all of these residents, and it really does take a toll. It took a toll on all the staff, and then PSWs, I'd come home and I'd strip off my clothes outside, before you go in, because you were so new, you were so afraid and you didn't know exactly what was going to happen or how this was going to spread to your families. And you certainly didn't want anyone else to get sick. So I think it was fear. It was exhaustion. It was a lot of sadness and a lot of just tons of burnout, you know? There were some good things with that. I mean, when you see when there's a crisis, you see a lot of people rallying and you see people supporting each other and lots of hugs from, you know, coworkers, because you just kind of have to. People will stop and cry and then you just have to, you know, tough up, give each other a hug and move on and carry on. So there was a lot of that, especially at my long-term care home that I worked at. But
Danielle, was there a tipping point for you in this? Because we know that, as you said, that these care homes are already short-staffed and that most of the people doing the work are women. Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely.
And we know that a lot of them, depending on the parts of the province or where one is in Canada, are racialized women, marginalized women. I know that in British Columbia, for example, and this was a positive thing that the provincial health officer did, because so many of the PSWs were working in multiple care homes just to make ends meet, right? Because the wages are not very hardy, and thereby spreading, potentially spreading COVID by going from care home to care home, working round the clock and that. So they, the government ensured that these PSWs were able to work in one location and they subsidized their wages. I thought that was really good, both for the workers and for the spread of COVID. I don't know if that happened in Ontario, did it?
Not in the same way. So it seemed, unfortunately, it seemed to be more our rights were taken away from us as workers. So we lost the ability to negotiate any employment contracts. We lost the ability to work in other locations. And this isn't just because we're not working in three different locations because we want to. This is necessity for most people, as you said, right? So that was a real issue. They did give a top up, a $3 top up that still exists. It's just kind of dangling that carrot to the PSWs. But I think that they were trying to do that to kind of maybe offset that cost of losing other income. But people did end up losing jobs because they'd have to pick, right?
Right.
And then that caused short staffing in other places. And it caused a lot of problems in home care in particular, because people would be working in long-term care and, you know, doing home care as well. And they would end up staying in long-term care instead. So home care really, really saw a big, you know, a big decrease in people as well.
So Danielle, what prompted you to leave working in long-term care and start a home care co-op, a worker co-op for PSWs? Tell us about that. And
yeah, well, I remember the day and it wasn't anything that amazing, really. I think it was just things adding up, right? Like the exhaustion, and that I felt like I was constantly battling a fight for resident rights and worker rights. And I really felt like I had nowhere to turn at this point. You know, you speak with your union, hands were tied because of government, the government rules that were put in place, even though I had a director who seemed to care about what we were saying and what was going on. Their hands were tied. And it really made me realize this isn't a worker issue. This isn't even a facility issue. This is really a systemic, you know, government issue.
Danielle, can I just interject? What were you advocating for at that point?
I was advocating for our residents to make sure that we had safer, like they were getting on, things were happening that were unsafe for our residents.
For example,
something as simple as, you know, corners being cut, face washing, missing baths. And this isn't just a pandemic thing. It was just laid out to the open, you know, with COVID. But it got pretty bad when you're noticing that people are not transferring their residents properly. Hmm. There were unsafe transfers, unsafe lifts that were happening. So instead of a two-person lift, when you're using the mechanical devices, you need Hoyer lifts. So you would need two people for that in long-term care. Unfortunately, because of the short staffing, it just didn't happen all the time. And it was not an issue. The workers would never do that to, you know, PSWs would never put anybody in an unsafe position. But you have to get 32 people to bed and there's two people working. It's impossible. It's just an impossible thing to do. So I think part of it was, you know, the anger where we're the ones working with everybody. We're the ones who are trying to make sure that they're taken care of and well-loved and safe. And then we would have management coming down on us going, why are the bells ringing? And you got to get, you know, it just, nobody would fix the problem. Maybe they didn't know what the fix was. I don't know. But I couldn't do it. And the thing that really stuck, like I left after one day, it was a pretty bad day. And I just felt like we were constantly having to say no to people. And I think that's my biggest thing is having to say no to somebody.
Heartbreaking.
Use the washroom, right? Yeah. Or, and my one, this one resident needed to use the washroom. And she was a two person, so we needed to wait for the machine and everybody else, you know, were in line per se to have their turn to use the washroom. And, you know, I'm like, we're going to be there really quick. I know you really have to go. We're going to be there as soon as we can. And I'm rushing, trying to, you know, get to her. And as soon as I got back, I knew, and she was crying and she had had an accident. And I broke down crying. And yeah. it might seem so simple in everything that was going on with the pandemic and everything, but it really was that moment where I'm like, I cannot do this anymore. I felt like I was being complicit. I felt like I was kind of part of the problem. This woman, there was no reason why anyone should have to soil themselves.
Right.
You know, absolutely no reason at all. It's not acceptable. These people deserve to live in dignity and peace and respect and be as independent as possible. And we were not able to help her with that. And it was just that. That was really it. So I finished off my shift and I called my union rep and I called my husband and I said, I'm not coming back.
What did you do next?
Well, I took the opportunity and I knew I wanted to work, you know, on my own and I wanted to work in private care. And I just figured that, and I'll speak to private care in a second, but I wanted to work on my own and be able to have a better say in how we treat people. Really listen to what our seniors and our elders want in the type of care that they, you know, are getting, and also listen to the PSWs, right? They're the experts in this field and caring for people, and they know, and they should have a right to have a really clear voice in their work environment. So I spent a good 8 months or so doing a lot of research, trying to kind of figure out the best way to do that market research. I asked a lot of questions. I trying to figure out how I can go about creating my own little business. And initially I thought it would just be maybe me and one other person, right? And I would be totally fine with that. But when I was doing some of my research and I did come up with some information on the Canadian Workers Cooperative Federation. And I'm like, well, I'm going to give them a call and see what they think. And that was kind of the start of where we are now, right? Like they were really supportive of this. And even though I knew what a co-op was, I didn't necessarily know the ins and outs of it, how to get anything started. So that was that one step to take my idea and my vision and turn it into reality.
And what were they saying to you about your idea? Because I don't know if you're the first home care co-op, maybe the first. I know that they've sprung up in the U.S. Over the last number of years. How did they support you?
Well, I mean, I think that they're realizing that the timing was so perfect.
That makes sense. Right.
Yeah. The timing was really perfect because people realized they needed a change. They wanted a change for our seniors and our elders. We wanted a change for our PSWs. And I think, you know, this presented a really good, feasible and viable option. They were really supportive. I didn't have, they were explaining to me kind of how you have to have the three, you know, three workers and three founders to be able to kind of incorporate as a cooperative. So that took me some time to find the right people.
Right.
Thankfully, I had a really good network of PSWs, so I was able to do that. But, you do need to, they both took a risk as well. So we all took a risk and left our jobs and decided to go off and do this. The CWCF offered me a grant. I was eligible for the technical assistant grant.
Right.
So I was super lucky because I had a co-op developer who worked with me for quite some time.
Wow.
And so I was able to, we really got we got our feasibility study done. We went through our bylaws, all this stuff that, you know, as a business owner now, I had no idea, right, what I would need to do. I would not have been able to, I think, even do any of this if it wasn't for them. It wasn't for my co-op developer. So I think that was that one step, right? Like, I had this idea. I'm a great PSW. I have experience in this field, but to be able to turn it into a business.
It's interesting that you ended up like going with a cooperative business. Like, were you thinking also of just kind of doing it as a small business, like not as a co-op? What led you down the cooperative path, or did you have background knowledge about co-ops or experience in the community there?
Yeah, I would say I am a kind of an activist when it comes to worker rights, and I'm social issues and social justice, and I spent a lot of time in the care economy, from being a foster parent to working in daycare and working with people with special needs. So I think that the justice side of things, the equity side of things, really has always been with me, right?
Yeah.
I knew enough about a co-op to know that that would be the way I wanted to do it. I think the main thing I knew is that I wanted this to be a not-for-profit right away. So, and that just kind of steered me. I wanted to be not-for-profit. I did not want any, you know, distant shareholders and big CEOs and people from the top. So this really needed to be a grassroots up type of movement, I guess, right? So I think it was kind of that was just the next step, you know, to take it to a cooperative.
Terrific. Now, at this point, how long have you been operating as a co-op?
We have only been operating, our first client was last July.
So almost a year.
Almost a year.
Right.
We've had waiting lists. This will probably be moving towards a second wait list.
Danielle,
for clients.
For clients. So
yeah.
Let's go back to the workers for a sec. How many PSWs are being employed? I guess they have to work for you for a bit and then apply to be a member and worker owner. Tell us about that road.
So we have 15 PSWs working for us.
Great.
Started off with just the three of us and grew fairly quickly. Within a month, we had to hire. And so we have 15 PSWs with us, just the three members at this point, because as you said, we do have a kind of a probationary period. So that's 480 hours of working, or 6 months. We have two PSWs who are going to be coming on board as members in May.
Great. So you'll grow to five.
So we'll be growing to five. So we're pretty excited about that. We have around 23 clients, I think. We service my area, and then we service the Durham area, which is just kind of east and north a little bit of Toronto.
Terrific. Yeah. So and what are you hearing from the PSWs? Because this is such a different experience, I imagine, for them, not with the clients, but just being part of something where it's democratically owned and operated. They have a voice, they're empowered. If they had experiences like you described at the beginning of our time together, they must be thrilled.
Well, honestly, I think they might be a little bit in shock.
Shock, yeah.
This is not, this is not the norm. And it's certainly not the norm for women. It's certainly not the norm for racialized women or marginalized women in any way. We go to work. We are used to kind of, you know, taking the heat, doing extra work without pay, a lot of free labor. So we don't really consider ourselves in that work environment to have a real equal voice or a true voice. It's meaningful. I know a lot of companies say it, and but is it really meaningful? You know, I haven't experienced that before. So I think at first, I think they might think when they come on board that we were maybe just another company until we start to kind of gradually teach them a little bit about what a cooperative is. And so we do spend with that 480 hours, that time we have created some education materials and videos and different things that we kind of steer our PSWs to. So they really do have a good understanding of what a worker cooperative is, and in particularly what ours is. We're all women owned. We'll stay that way.
Great.
So they, when they come on board, they're really true proud members who are knowledgeable about this.
Right. I saw your slogan is PSWs United, which is really quite empowering, like being together, doing that work, feeling supported amongst a network of other PSWs and valued for the work that you're doing, which, as you say, is so important with any community member that's fragile and needs help, right? It's a lot of heart, H-E-A-R-T work, isn't it?
It is.
It really comes from the heart. It's very physically demanding and challenging, but really it's about relationships, isn't it? Hopefully.
Well, that's the way relationships is exactly what it's supposed to be about. And that's the one thing that we, like, we have a minimum of 2 hours per visit, just as an example. So there's no more 45 minutes here and we're going to rush in and just give Jane a shower so we can get to John. And our main goal really is to build a meaningful relationship with our clients. We try really hard to make sure that it's the same PSWs going in all the time. Yeah. There's that trust, and not just the trust of the clients, but the trust of the families, that they know that their loved ones are well taken care of. So sometimes it's, you know, we'll shower, we do meal prep, we go for walks. I had a client today, I took him to a hearing aid appointment and we went and got groceries.
Did you go to Tim's for a coffee after?
But that's it, right?
We can
of those things.
I know. Yes. I used to do that with my dad just for an outing, right? We'd go to the hearing aids and then we'd go to Tim's or go to McDonald's for an ice cream, you know, as part of the social part of it and getting out.
Yeah. Our clients are not our tasks. Right. And we are very lucky that we get paid for what we do. But they're not our tasks. They really are our joy, and we love spending time with them. And we always joke about who's our favorite, and we can never pick anybody. Everybody's our favorite. Oh my God. You know?
Yeah. How do the wages compare with people who are working in long-term care or for other, they call them agencies or that, where does that stand?
So right now, as members, we are paying more in my area than the other agencies are. So we're starting as members at $22 an hour. We also offer 7 paid sick days for our members. We're working right now to create, hopefully with another some other sectors, to create a federated cooperative. So for the care economy. So we are really hoping that that will help us with benefits and pension. That's the one thing that I think the key thing that is separating, you know, this to be a really, really good long-term employment. We have to be able to retain and keep them, right? And recruit them.
And benefits are very important.
Yeah. Yeah.
People need that. And what are you hearing from clients about your service?
Well, honestly, I thought clients would initially, I just assumed that they would want to have good quality care and they'd be really experienced. And we're getting calls because we're a worker co-op.
Really? So you're educating the clients as well about that?
We are. We're getting calls because of that. We're getting calls, and we're getting calls saying, you know, you guys are great. Finally, people are taking care of the workers. Finally, you guys are. And that's it. We take care of our PSWs. They in turn take really good care of our clients. It works really well.
Do you see this as influencing the government in any way in Ontario to make things more equitable for PSWs and for people in long-term care? I know they did a big study on long-term care in the pandemic, and then the minister resigned, or I don't know, got moved or whatever. Yeah. But I've heard concerns about it setting up a two-tiered system, you know, for those that can afford and those that can't afford. How do you see this going forward?
Well, I mean, okay, when we already have a two-tiered system, so I don't, you know, but on the other hand, we don't have an option but to do something different, right? We have people on the wait list waiting in hospitals for care. I'm getting referred from our publicly funded hospital. So things are so bad right now that our publicly funded hospital is referring to us anyways. So I might as well make sure that they're going to get good care, our clients are going to get care, and we can get them out of the hospital and back into their homes and keep them from prematurely going into long-term care. In regards to this being maybe a stepping stone to a change in the government, I really do hope so. We do have that proposal that I was speaking to you about with the Federated Cooperative. We are speaking to MPPs currently about kind of partnering with them a little bit and kind of really hoping that they can put some funding towards supporting worker cooperatives in the care economy, as opposed to for-profit private care homes all the time, and make that a really feasible alternative. I wouldn't exist if our publicly funded system worked, and it doesn't. I am all for public, everything. All healthcare education should be publicly funded. So I advocate a lot on behalf of my clients to get self-directed funding. And most of my clients so far who are eligible have been able to get that. Most of them didn't even know it existed. So it's not, we're not for profit. I'm not in this to make money. I'm in this to make sure that, you know, I can give meaningful employment to our PSWs, make sure we give good quality care to our clients, and keep people out of the hospitals and out of long-term care for as long as they can.
That was Danielle Turpin, co-founder of the Home Care Workers Cooperative, a worker co-op for personal support workers serving residents in the Peterborough and Durham regions of Ontario. Danielle mentioned a federation for care workers that would manage things like bulk buying of equipment, benefits, pensions, and other areas. And we'll hear more about that prospect after the break. A reminder, you're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at cooperadio.org.
your radio?
Who owns 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 your radio?
You do.
Vancouver Co-op Radio.
100.5 FM.
CFRO. The People's Radio Station.
Give me that.
It's mine.
I want it.
No, it's mine.
No, give it to me.
You have to give it back.
Stop. Instead of fighting, try working together. Honestly. Openly in a spirit of caring for others. And tune in to Each for All, The Cooperative Connection. Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM. On your dial and online at cooperadio.org.
We're back here on Each for All, The Cooperative Connection. And we just heard from Danielle Turpin, a personal support worker from Peterborough, Ontario, who's recently started her own worker co-op. In the second half of our show, we're going to be going to hear about a project that's being proposed to create a federated care cooperative that would assist care workers and their organizations. And we often talk on Each for All about the Cooperative Housing Federation of BC and the Housing Federation of Canada. These are umbrella organizations that offer their members shared services, and they provide support. These reduce costs and risks for the organizations involved. As we heard from Danielle there, they can also attract and help retain workers and build that sector. Our guest tonight is Dr. Simon Berge, and he is an associate professor and director of the newly established Research Center on Cooperative Enterprises at the University of Winnipeg. The Research Center on Cooperative Enterprises is increasing awareness of the cooperative business model and encouraging students to interact with the cooperative businesses through internships. So we got Simon on the line here from Guelph, Ontario tonight. Hi, Simon. Are you there?
Yes. Hello.
Oh, fantastic. So thank you so much for staying up late. As I said, you're joining us tonight from Guelph, Ontario. We really appreciate you coming on the air to share this interesting proposal with our guests.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
So for our guests that might not really think much about the care economy, we understand that this is looking at creating an organization to assist a lot of different smaller organizations. So this umbrella organization to help those in the care sector. Can you tell us, maybe give us a little bit of a picture of what is the care economy or the care sector that we're talking about?
Well, the care sector, we've taken a broad approach to defining the care sector. We're talking about people that provide home care, daycare, disability care. These are people who are normally in an unregulated field of healthcare, and they're there to provide, you know, assistance to those in need. Some of the most difficult employment situations that we really have. It's hard to value what they do because they offer basic necessities that people require. For example, how do we value the care we give to our children in daycare? We pay a particular amount of money, but it's certainly worth more than that, and it can be a very stressful job for people. So to address this issue, we really need to take a different approach to how we treat the people that work in this sector. They're not simply providing a generic service. They're actually looking out for people's needs, from, you know, getting a meal to mental health to grocery shopping or just basically taking care of general hygiene, things we take for granted every day. But as we get older, these things become more difficult, and we need help to accomplish them. And that's what the care sector is all about.
And so we heard from Danielle in the beginning of the show, they're setting up the Home Care Workers Cooperative, working specifically in the personal support worker field. How did you connect with Danielle, and how did they help inform this discussion paper that we're going to talk about?
Oh, okay. So As you know, I work for the University of Winnipeg, and part of my position there is director of the Research Center of Cooperative Enterprises. And I take that to mean that I'm trying to get out there and promote awareness of cooperatives, promote the development of the cooperative movement in Canada. And I work with the Ontario Cooperative Association, along with other associations, to promote the development of this different approach to economic activity, the cooperative approach. And Danielle's home care worker cooperative was working with the Ontario Cooperative Association, and they introduced us. And I really thought that they had something really important here. I've worked in the healthcare sector before, and I know that our typical economic approach to treating workers doesn't really work in a care setting. People who work in the care sector have giant hearts. They're there to help people, not to make money. The two aren't necessarily incompatible, don't get me wrong, but they lead with their hearts, not with their pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they can be taken advantage of in the marketplace. And we see that through a lot of the reports that are being produced about elder care, disability care in our current system. And I was intrigued with what Danielle's approach meant, which is to put the power back into the care workers' hands so that they can work with their clients, with the people they care for, to provide the best quality care, not necessarily the best quality care at a profit.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So, go ahead.
No, go ahead,
Dan. Well, I mean, I was curious because we are talking, we did hear from Danielle about that change in power dynamics with the worker cooperative. I was wondering if you have a sense of, you know, is there a few worker co-ops, a lot of worker co-ops out there in this sector, or is this like a real anomaly at this point?
I would say right now it's a bit of an anomaly. The co-op sector is one that has been struggling with awareness for a long time. For example, I teach a number of undergraduate courses in co-op management and entrepreneurship. And every year I get the same question from my students, is Costco a co-op?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they don't know what it is. The co-op world has left, in my opinion, has left a generation behind. They're not aware of the community co-op store. That's not part of their everyday lives. So they've lost that awareness. And as a result, the ability to develop cooperatives like the PSW cooperative that Danielle has created with her group of PSWs, it's not there. If you don't know what co-op is, how do you go about developing one?
Well, we were really encouraged to hear the story how they, you know, connected with the Canadian Worker Co-op Federation. They did receive a technical assistant grant there. They were able to tap into the knowledge of a cooperative developer and really bring that dream to fruition. It sounds like, you know, these are things that just are raising awareness, and, you know, that's why we do a radio show about co-ops, is really an important aspect of really getting cooperatives to become a known alternative out there.
Well, that is why education has been a key component of cooperatives since the very beginning. The duty to educate of the Rochdale pioneers, the current principal education, training, and information. It's all about building awareness, but that awareness has to start earlier, in my opinion. The awareness of the students I get when they come to universities is that there's a for-profit and there's not-for-profit organizations in the world, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not-for-profit, you're altruistic, you're going to give away everything and be poor the rest of your life, and that's what that sector does. If you're for profit, you want to be that billionaire, the next or trillionaire in society, and be the giant CEO. There's no middle ground that they're aware of, the cooperative sector. And, you know, that's starting to change, but luckily Danielle and her group happened to find information about worker cooperatives, got a grant to actually enact it, and that's wonderful. But what we would like to do is make that a little more systematic. That way we can actually address the conflicts within the system between caring and profit.
So let's talk about the discussion paper, which is how we connected. We'd read a paper passed on from Danielle. It called Federated Care Cooperative, and it was published in January of this year. And it really outlines an interesting federation of care worker organizations and a way, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but a way of really fostering a sector here. Can you really tell us how that this idea came together and how you see it playing out?
Sure. So the Home Care Worker Cooperative is an amazing entity. It developed spontaneously, grassroots approach. There was a need that Danielle saw, her and her group saw within the sector, and they developed their organization around that. That's wonderful, but we have to basically find a way to make that a more systematic approach to developing these organizations across Ontario, across Canada. And as a result, we sort of brainstormed some ideas. And what came to mind originally was sort of the format of Arctic Co-ops Limited. Arctic Co-ops Limited helps to develop cooperatives in Canada's far north, where economic rules really are difficult because of the rural and remote location, small population groups, that sort of thing. But at the same time, Arctic Co-ops provides sort of back office supports, accounting, legal, HR, marketing, for these cooperatives to develop. So they're not left alone to hopefully spontaneously develop. There's actually a mechanism that can occur where entrepreneurs, PSWs in the care sector case, or DSWs, disability support workers, can go somewhere and get the information they need to create an organization where they can actually go about doing the care work and leave the business work to someone else. Right? Someone with training, someone with expertise. Because what a lot of these organizations or entrepreneurs struggle with is they're basically told, great, you want to start a business? Wonderful. Do everything. Do absolutely everything. Do your care work, but don't forget to file your annual reports. Go off and make sure that your clients are happy, but don't forget about your human resource policy development. And all of these things just pile up and pile up and pile up so that the actual personal support workers are left doing paperwork rather than the caring that they actually got into their positions to do in the first place. So the idea we had was, why not create a federated cooperative that will allow them to build their own businesses, their own cooperative, so they're in control of all the activities, but we as a federation can assist them with all of that marketing and governance and human resourcing activities that they're just not really keen to jump into.
Well, I mean, you really outlined the complexity of what it takes to run one of these, even a small organization of the size of, I think, Danielle's mentioned 15 workers now at the Home Care Workers Cooperative. You still need all of this overhead, and that's once you've actually established this business. So I was really, I was intrigued about this idea that the Federated Care Cooperative could have incubation services to really provide the ability to get up and running, as well mm-hmm. as all of those additional logistical things from, as you mentioned, payroll and you know, taxes, hiring and everything. Yeah.
That's right. One of the things I found quite interesting, obviously, so my background is business. That's what I went to school to learn and study, and now I research. But PSWs don't get that. They don't even get an inkling of basic bookkeeping. In the Home Care Worker Cooperative organization, they lucked out. They have someone who has that expertise, which is wonderful. That's fabulous. But what about all those other, hopefully, grassroots organizations that want to develop that don't know a bookkeeper that can help them out, right? Or don't know someone who can manage the logistics.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what we want to establish, to sort of take the burden away from the PSWs so they can set up their organizations, define the quality of care that they want to offer and to whom, the clients they want to offer it to, while the Federated Cooperative provides them with everything else that they're really not interested in diving into.
And so you've outlined in the discussion paper a couple of different ways of approaching this. You kind of have like an expedited model and one that, you know, might take a bit more time. I think you call them the quick start, slow start. And maybe can you kind of outline how you see this Federated Care Cooperative getting off the ground? I'm also curious, you know, who's going to fund this type of a project?
Right. So the initial approach that I typically take with these sorts of projects is trying to find multiple pathways. In this particular discussion paper, I really wanted to jump on to the strong demand for these services, and that would be the quick start, getting as much funding available as possible so that we could start developing these cooperatives quickly. There's a huge demand in Ontario alone for PSWs to remain in the sector and to attract new ones. And the best way to do that is to empower them and to provide them with benefits that would encourage them to remain in the sector. So choosing a quick start method is possible, but large amounts, as you mentioned, large amounts of capital would be required to accomplish that. We have gone to both the provincial and federal government discussing the options of them funding this type of concept. However, perhaps our timing was a little off, given the provincial election in Ontario, and the federal government being perhaps preoccupied with the war in Ukraine and other issues as well. But the quick start method would require sort of government backing in order to ensure that it gets off the ground successfully with the capital required.
Mm.
One of the major issues of most startups is the lack of access to capital, as most cooperators will tell you. Without capital, you can't have a growth strategy that is overly aggressive, or you'll take on too much work and not provide an adequate service and end up putting your cooperative at risk of failure. So that is where we came up with a slow start method, where not as much capital is required, but at the same time, we can still start developing the structure that is the bare bones needed for a federated cooperative. So, for example, I spoke with Danielle's group to find out what their key priorities are when they were first starting out. Things like knowledge of governance, understanding what a cooperative was, starting at the very basics to get that information out there. Once that's done, we can then start marketing this to PSWs who are interested in starting their own cooperatives, and developing their business plans and marketing plans. That sort of capital wouldn't require a great deal. What we're working on, obviously, is the capital structure. Where is the funding going to come from? There are some grants that we're working towards to fund that. But also there's the opportunity perhaps of creating what I'm considering is a consumer cooperative through the Federation. So basically the Federation can encourage family and loved ones to support the development of the independent or local cooperatives by funding the Federated Cooperative. So there's a number of approaches that we're working on right now. The overall idea is in its infancy. It's just starting. We have some good detail, but we really need to start getting some boots on the ground, and some information, some awareness out there of this model.
And so you mentioned working with the Ontario Co-op Association, and really the whole discussion paper speaks to this being an Ontario initiative. How do you, well, why Ontario, I guess, and then how are you feeling about the chances of getting provincial or provincial support, or maybe from Ontario co-ops or from the care sector economy there?
There is a possibility there. Quebec, for example, has a similar model that they've also started, but Quebec has always been on the forefront of cooperative development. Ontario, obviously a good choice to begin with for this type of approach because of the large concentration of cooperatives, right? So it is possible that funding could be found there or partnerships could be developed there. With the Home Care Worker Cooperative established already and some awareness being built up in Ontario of this care sector federated model, it seemed logical at the time to begin with a focus on Ontario. That being said, a federated cooperative in this modern age can obviously provide services to all of English-speaking Canada quite readily through the wonderful invention of the internet, right?
I wonder also how it might also connect with just the healthcare cooperative sector and whether you've talked to other folks working in healthcare co-ops. And I know that there was a healthcare cooperative federation that was operating in Canada for a while, and I'm not sure if they're still active. Have you made any connections there?
Yes, I have reached out to them. They are a volunteer organization, so they do struggle with capacity issues. They have been very helpful, but they are struggling with capacity. That is an issue with a lot of the co-ops in the care sector. It's the capacity. Since we have not really, as a co-op movement in Canada, focused on developing the overall movement or a sector level approach even, when it comes to the healthcare, there's a significant lack of capacity in this area.
Yeah, that's a story we've heard before for sure. So, I mean, also just kind of feeling the challenges of the care economy. We've certainly seen and heard some really tangible stories over the last 2 years with the impact of COVID showing the real lack of resources there within that sector. You know, certainly this is something that people are looking for a solution to build back better. Are you hearing anybody in any places of power that might have budgets associated with them looking to models that are different than the standard model we've been running with of these private run organizations where we could see care workers creating co-ops?
I wish I could say yes, But I'll be honest, most of the outreach we have is been at the very sort of building of the awareness stage.
Okay.
About, not to fault any of the people we've interacted with, but it's really difficult for them to gather all the information they need to understand our proposal. And then say, okay, this fits within their policy approach, and it will be potentially successful, or there may be challenges, and what funding can we apply to it? So because we've lost a lot of that co-op awareness at the government level, they're struggling to even understand the very concept of a federated cooperative. And that's sort of where we're at.
Wow. Okay. Well, it sounds like your work cut out for you there. But we would like to check back, and please do reach out as you make progress through this. Would it be all right if we posted your paper on our website along with this broadcast?
Oh, please. It is just a discussion paper, so by all means, feel free. And if anyone wants to discuss...
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to let you go to sleep now. I really appreciate you staying up late and joining us tonight from Guelph, Ontario. Our guest has been Simon Burgi.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Have a good night.
Bye.
That was Dr. Burgi. He's an associate professor and director of the newly established Research Center on Cooperative Enterprises at the University of Victoria. And, oh my gosh, the University of Winnipeg, sorry. University of Victoria is my alma mater there. the Research Center on Cooperative Enterprises at the University of Winnipeg. And this has been another episode of Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. I'm your host, Robin Puga, and my co-host is Sandy Goldman. You're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio. This is CFRO 100.5 FM. And if you'd like to get in contact with us here at Each for All, you can email us at ideas@eachforall.coop or tweet us at Each for All on Twitter. Our website is eachforall.coop, and we'll have this episode posted there shortly. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you for listening. Download this episode and others at our site, eachforall.coop, and tune in next week for more updates and news from the co-op and social economy sectors. Have a cooperative week out there, and we'll see you again in 7 days here on Vancouver Co-op Radio.
I heard you, man. Yo, check, yo. Yeah, it's a conniption. Fit in the microphone lit. I take it higher like a bird on a wire. Retire the fire, I'll never. Cause I'm just moving on up. Choosing to touch the unseen. Craving the clutch. The most inevitable, legible pyromania. Slaying the devil and sending them back to Transylvania. Strangely enough, I evolved outside of the ghetto.